Yes, some question.
We have a question from Ajit Krishna Prabhu.
Yeah.
Please explain why Ishwara Puri, already being in the presence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, mm-hmm. went, as it is said in Chaitanya Bhagavata Adikanda, chapter 11, text 123, to serve Krishna to some other places. Why didn't he stay and serve Mahaprabhu?
I can say the will of Krishna, the will of Mahaprabhu. Most often the devotees, of course they want to stay with Mahaprabhu. Everyone wants to stay with Mahaprabhu. Nityananda Prabhu, he wants to be with Mahaprabhu. You know, he's restless with madness, anticipating his pastimes with Mahaprabhu. We hear when he's growing up in Ekachakra, after some time, some sannyasi comes and begs him from Hari Pandit, which is a heartbreaking pastime. As I said to Gurudev once, I said, some say it was Madhavendra Puri. And Gurudev said, yes, some say it was. He's like, neither confirming nor denying. But then Nityananda Prabhu goes to so many holy places. Nimai Pandit is in Navadvip, but as eager as his heart is to join with him, he knows that time has not come. So he's waiting, and he visits Vrindavan and says, you know, he was, what did he say? He was astonished to find that there was no one there. You know, a mysterious statement. And he says, where'd everybody go? And they say, haven't you heard, you know, Krishna has appeared in Navadvip. All of Vaikuntha emptied out and everybody went there. Right? And we hear also in that regard, sadau pasya srimandrita manujakai pranayitam bahadvi girvanesha parimrishti parvritivi girvane parimrishti parvritivi Shiva, Brahma, and a host of other gods and goddesses donning the forms of human beings, Brahmins, Brahmanis, and otherwise, and they're appearing in Navadvip and to get a glimpse of Mahaprabhu. So Nityananda Prabhu, he wants to join with Mahaprabhu. But the time comes, the famous meeting at the house of Nandanacharya, where officially Nityananda Prabhu and Mahaprabhu are meeting. He wants to be with Mahaprabhu. They're in Puri. Mahaprabhu, after doing his public service, he wants to go into his private life and internal culture with Srup Damodar. And by that, I mean to say, you know, he has no real external. His external aspect is all divine, but he wants to cultivate the deep sentiments of the heart of Srimati Radharani, which during the daytime he's trying to avoid for fear of exhibiting uncontrollable ecstatic sentiments. We're told, and mostly in the association of his devotees that is achieved, but at night the deep feelings of separation come out. But when, and Guru Maharaj's words, after he's done his public service and Advaita writes his mystic poem, more or less giving him leave, and Mahaprabhu saying to Srup Damodar, what does this mean? And Srup Damodar saying, he doesn't really want to say what it means himself, saying, I suppose you know. And Mahaprabhu, in a half-joking way, says, like, Advaita Charge is like one of those people we see in Bengal or at Teen Number Tank. They commission a deity for a festival, some religious performance. They bring the deity there, and after the performance, they toss them in the kunda, in the pond. He says, so Advaita Tulasi Dala Matrena Jalasya Chulakena Ba. Vikrinite tam atmanam sam bhaktebhyo bhaktavatsala, with a palm full of Ganga water and tulsi leaves, Advaita Acharya brought him down. Saying, now I did, I answered his request, spread Nam Sankirtan everywhere, liberated so many people, and I guess he doesn't need me anymore. He's finished with that deity. But he's a little joking, but what he's saying is, Advaita Acharya is sort of saying that purpose of your pastimes has been fulfilled. Now you're free to engage in your internal culture, which is the real purpose of your descent, as given, recorded by Srup Damodar Goswami in his notes, and referenced by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami and Sri Chaitanya Charitamritam, Radha, Sri Radhaya Pranaya Mahima Kidrisho Vani Eva, that he wants to experience the position of Srimati Radharani. And around this time, he tells his beloved Nityananda Prabhu, You go to Bengal and don't come every year for this Ratya. Just you go preach in Bengal. Because ontologically speaking, and from the, rasa vichar, and Guru Maharaj has told us, we see evidence of this in the pastimes of Krishna. The Madhura rasa pastimes do not take place in the presence of Balaram. And he has to be engaged in some other pastimes. In the presence of Balaram, Krishna and Radharani behave in a particular way. So here, Mahaprabhu wants to go into this exclusive culture, Radha Bhava Duti Subalita, in the company of Ramananda Roy and Srup Damodar. Srup Damodar, Ramananda Roy, Lalita Vishakha. So in the mood of Radharani, with her two principal assistants, Lalita Vishakha. So he's telling Nityananda Ram, Balaram, like, you will go to Bengal and preach there and tell everyone about Krishna. And of course, we know, what does Nityananda Prabhu do in response to that? He goes, but at first, there's some, maybe first year, a little not following 100%. But when he goes there, what did we hear? Bhaja Gauranga, Kaha Gauranga, Laha Gauranga Nam. Instead of telling everyone about Krishna, he's saying, worship Gauranga, speak of Gauranga, take the name of Gauranga. And we could say, he's violating Mahaprabhu's order. He's not following the instructions. That Nityananda. But Prabodhananda, Guru Maharaj, when Prabodhananda Saraswati is saying, he knows, really, yata yata gora padara vinde, vindeta bhaktim krita punya rasi, tatat tatot sarpati hridya kasmat, radha padam boja sudamburasi. He knows that Vrindavan is the exclusive domain of the highest section of liberated souls. So who can enter there? Extremely rare indeed. Was that last part of Brahma Sanghita? Shati Birala Katipaye, Gurudev would quote sometimes. Also in connection with Vedeshu, Birala. Saying katipadiye, how rare it is. And in conjunction with vedeshu durlabham adurlabham atmabhakto. And last verse, Upadeshamrita, how rare to achieve certain position is, even for the Parama Prestha Sakis. So, but he's saying, if you fully concentrate all of your serving potential and energy at the lotus feet of Mahaprabhu, who is Mahaprabhu? Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nahayanya. This is the way to get that connection. He, Nityananda Prabhu Balaram, he knows fully well. So therefore Narottam can say with great certainty, Nitai Korunahave Braje Radha Krishna Bhave. Without the mercy of Nityananda, you cannot enter there. Heno Nitai Bine Bhai Radha Krishna Paite Nai. Same thing again. So he's sent in that position. Gadadhar Pandit wants to stay with Mahaprabhu. And he's told by Mahaprabhu, no, you will stay in Puri and serve Gopinath. Rupa Goswami wants to stay with Mahaprabhu. Mahaprabhu is saying, no, my desire is you will go to Vrindavan. And in following my order, you'll have my association. Sanatan Goswami wants to stay with Mahaprabhu. And he's told, or Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, after Mahaprabhu tells him, go to Vrindavan, write these books, excavate the holy places. He's saying, it is impossible to describe the separation of Sanatana Goswami and Mahaprabhu. It's so painful and heartbreaking, it's impossible to describe. Yet, he follows the order of Mahaprabhu. Sachi Mata, she wants to stay with Mahaprabhu. He wants Mahaprabhu to stay with her, Nimai Pandit. But she realizes that will be the cause of some blame toward him from the society after taking sannyas and staying with his mother. So he asks, what shall I do? And she said, if you can stay in Puri, then from time to time I will get some news about you. And devotees are coming, going from Navadvip, Puri all the time. And that way she makes some sacrifice. Vishnu Priya does not want for separation to take place. So in so many ways we see this is the situation, but the Lord, he has his own divine will and how to use these devotees in different ways. So when it comes to Ishwara Puri, the great disciple of Madhavendra Puri and guru of Nimai Pandit, he's lost in the madness of Krishna Prem. And the Lord has particular pastimes that are developing, unfolding, evolving in Navadvip and leading to other positions. So what is being described is, you know, in the madness of his Krishna Prem, he's going to this place, to that place, not out of curiosity or whim in the ordinary sense, but it's saying, like Guru Maharaj would say, we can see how Krishna Prem plays a man like a doll. So that the Krishna Prem within him, that relish, is compelling him to go to this place and that place, these different holy places. And it is the will of Krishna. That the devotee is at the disposal of the will of Krishna. You say, no, I want to stay here and not go. But what is Krishna's will? So we'll think of it in that way. The will of Mahaprabhu, the will of Krishna, and Madhavendra Puri, Ishwara Puri, and his divine madness, he's going to different holy places. And just as is indicated there, we're saying he purified Navadvip. And we're going to think, well, wait, Navadvip, isn't that so pure? But it means from an external point of view, it was overrun with logicians and offenders in different ways and like that. And by his divine presence, it's being purified, upgraded toward it. As Gurmur said, evolution really is something when it's only evolving toward it, toward what it actually is. Just like the sun. The sun has a position, but we may see some evolution in terms of, you know, before sunrise, the twilight, then sunrise, and then we see it appears to be achieving some sort of a position. So Navadvip has an eternal position, but out of the necessity of Leela, there's some opposition group, some logicians, Nyayik logicians, and different people who, although they appear to be opposition from one point of view, they're helping, they're assisting the pastimes, the progress of the pastimes. So Srila Prabhupada, he liked to quote one verse from the Bhagavatam. It says, Yasya Atma Bhuti Kunape Tridatuke Svadid Kalatra Dishuboma Ijadi Yatirta Bhuti Shalale Nakarhichid Janeshu Abhigeshu Saeva Gokara. With Yatirta Bhuti Shalale Nakarhichid. Said that peoples whose intelligence is polluted, they go to holy places to become relieved of their sins. And just accepting that that's something that can be done, it's a karmakandic kind of thing. Someone's imposing their lower conception upon the higher. That's their purpose. They want to become relieved of their sins. They're bathing in the Ganga or visiting some holy place. So he makes the point, he's saying, so in one sense, these places become a collection of what they've left behind. He said, so then the actual pure devotees, the higher devotees, they go there to, restore, rejuvenate them. And the point, and he's saying, so a person who goes to a holy place, not to connect with and interact with an actual saint. It says, sa'eva gokra, they're compared to a cow or an ass. Right? The ass part we understand, but generally we think, well, cow, that's a good thing, I thought. Yeah. But when it says cow, what it means is, it's a reference, sometimes cows, they give birth to a calf that dies. But that calf that is dead, it's now a dead body, they're licking that, they're giving it so much affection. But the substantial element is no longer there. So that's what they're saying. To go to a so-called holy place and not be under the guidance of superior Vaishnavas is to miss the point. So when we hear of some great devotee like Ishwara Puri going to these holy places, on the one side, there's his own internal culture and divine remembrance of that place and the pastimes, what is invoked in his heart. And in the case of very exalted devotees, you know, real-time, live-streaming Leela. They're irresistibly drawn into that. But from another point of view, it's also beneficial for other people, right, to get their association. Just as sometimes we find different associates of Mahaprabhu, they're scattered in different places. So many exalted souls were in what is modern-day Bangladesh. At the time, Banga, East Bengal, Pundarik Vidyanidhi comes to mind, and there were others. And we want to think, like, well, why were they there and not, you know, in Navadvip? It's the will of Krishna, the plan of the Lord to give those people some association and also to purify those places. So we shouldn't interpret this in a way to think that it implies any lack of appreciation on the part of Ishwara Puri for Mahaprabhu. That would be erroneous. But see it from an overview of the will of Krishna, intersected with the will of the devotees, and actually the distribution of mercy. So while those great souls, they're attracted to go to those places because of the potency of Krishna's pastimes, and they're there experiencing that, then other people get the opportunity to connect with them, to hear from them, interact with them. Yes.
It is said that you should not reject the mercy. How to understand that? What if you are not a proper receiver?
I don't think that's your choice, your decision. And generally, this runs counter to the current of Vaishnava thought, because we're told a devotee will think, I'm unqualified, I'm disqualified, I'm the most needy in this direction. So then they're obviously a proper recipient for mercy. To think that you're not a proper recipient of mercy is to say, like, no, I'm doing fine. No, I don't need any help. We're told when the poet Allen Ginsberg approached Bobby Kennedy, who I, at that time, maybe he was the attorney general or something. Or no, he had some position in government, about Prabhupada needed his visa extended. Otherwise, he'd have to leave the country. So Allen Ginsberg said, I'll give him a call, because he receives his calls. He's a famous poet. He likes poetry. And while on the phone, so he's making the case, he's saying, you know, Swami is good for America. You know, we should keep the Swami in America. And there's something I'd like you to hear. And Ginsberg, who was an eccentric and did the unpredictable, he starts playing on his harmonium and singing the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. And so Bobby, he's listening on the phone, like, you know. And he's going, very good, Alan, he said, and he's pointing in his office down to the White House. He said, but I think the guy down there needs it more than me. So, if you, to think, you know, you're not the proper one is to indirectly say that you don't need mercy. And the aspiring servitor will never think like that. They will think, I'm needy, I'm the most needy. And that genuine sentiment, don't want to use the word qualify, because we can say mercy is in one sense unqualified, but it puts them in a position of being a likely recipient of receiving mercy. But if we interpret this any other way and say, this just demonstrates again that this person should receive mercy because they're saying, oh, maybe I'm not fit for it. That's the whole idea. You know, it's not you say, no, I think I'm qualified. I've been doing, you know, a lot of really good things. You know, no, they say, I'm not a proper person. I'm not fit for. That's the right mentality. But that said, I mentioned someone called Gurudev and asked them over the phone for his mercy. You know, he said, you know, Krishna bless you, Guru Maharaj bless you, etc. Then within a week, they called again. Same thing. And Gurudev said, what did you do with the mercy I gave you last week? What happened to that? So Rupa and Sanatan, they're approaching Mahaprabhu with a straw between their teeth, deploring their own position or condition, but saying, therefore, we're fit candidates to receive your mercy. We think so. And we see that thread consistent throughout the expressions of Vaishnavas. You won't find a more suitable candidate because there's no one more fallen than I. And that'll be the real test of the purifying power of your mercy if it can affect a man like me. Any other question?
Should we fight for seva? Or is there, if there is someone who can do it better than us or can do it at all, we should give him or her the way?
Well, both. Sometimes Gurudev encouraged some healthy, shall we say, competition between servitors over some particular service, but taking it that both are qualified, and that and they're showing some attachment that they would like to continue doing this service, fighting in that way. But from a higher point of view, Guru Maharaj mentions the case of Srimati Radharani and saying her general tenor is to promote others. That's her first line, to promote others. She wants others to do the seva for Krishna. Right? And she wants it to expand and extend to others. And I recall within the first week of joining, hearing, you know, a Prabhupada said, but when someone is newly recruited, comes to the Krishna consciousness movement, that Radharani, she goes to Krishna and says, Krishna, you must accept them. They're better than me. Which is impossible, but it's showing a particular type of heart. She's saying, you, and how can Krishna refuse her? She's saying, Krishna, you must accept them. They're better than me. Impossibility, but nonetheless, her mood. So Srila Guru Maharaj is saying, she's always promoting others. But when she sees that there's no one qualified to do a particular service, then she does that service herself. So Guru Maharaj also encouraged managers in a particular way. That it's common sense understanding. Someone is in the position of managing a group of devotees, they think, oh, someone comes forward, they think, oh, there's a variety of services that need to be done. You can do this. That anyone can understand. But Srila Guru Maharaj made another point. He said, actually, and it's thematic with his guru-disciple conception, that actually the guru is serving the disciple. So he said the manager, what they should be careful to see is what is the desired service from the upper world, from Krishna, Mahaprabhu, what is the desired service from this servitor? And how can I assist them in achieving that? That's a very different way of seeing. Rather than saying like, I've got these different things that need to be done and you've come forward, so help me do that. And that's good. We're not saying that's not good. That's also a good thing. But on a deeper look, the person in the so-called superior position, they should be thinking, I am the servant of this devotee. They're an aspiring servitor of Krishna. How can I assist them in doing the service that's expected from them? That's a higher, more mature sort of vision. So Guru Maharaj is telling us, Srimati Radharani, she's thinking according to what all these servitors, what the service that needs to be done to Krishna, and she's seeing all of these servitors, how they can serve Krishna. And she wants to promote that. That's her mercy and her grace. But when she sees there is no qualified person, then she realizes, I need to do this service myself. So when we see that someone, and we know really truly that someone is more qualified to do a particular service, and we're talking about God brothers and God sisters, we should promote them. Not thinking like, no, I want to do that, and I'm going to fight to do that, even though I can't do it as well as they can. What is that ego? What compels that? But rather we think, no, there's a particular service. Let's make it something simple or more easy to understand. Say, it's making a pot of sweet rice. And we might say like, I want to do that. And although I have a tendency to burn sweet rice, add salt instead of sugar, and ruin it time and time again, and this person makes perfect sweet rice in the best way, I'm going to fight them so that I can do it. I'm giving, you know, an extreme to make a point. We should say, no, they're the best one at doing this. I think they should do it also. Maybe I can assist them in doing it. That would be a better attitude. But if they say, well, but there's no one else to do it but you, then you'll say, I'll try not to burn it. I'll remember to add sugar instead of, you know, I'm going to try and do this the best I can. I don't think I'm the best person, but as you say, there's no one else to do this seva, I'm ready to do it. That's okay. But not to prevent others. Guru Maharaj said one of the hallmarks of progressive devotion is to feel some pain in one's heart if someone's not doing so well or they're going down, and to feel some happiness or joy if you see another devotee is making progress. He saw that as healthy and progressive. But if we say there's two qualified servitors, equally qualified, but only one can do the seva. If someone, they think, I can do this seva the best, not an ego assertion, but I think I can do the desired service the best, then they can fight for that. But generally speaking, the tenor of Vaishnavas is to think of themselves as unqualified. Just when someone is asked to speak, Guru Maharaj's appearance day will come and someone will say, and now this devotee who's conducting the ceremony, someone's always conducting the ceremony, they will say, and now so-and-so will speak. Very often, that Vaishnava will begin their talk by saying, I'm not at all qualified to speak. There's so many here who are more qualified than me. Yet, so-and-so Maharaj has asked me to say something, and with the blessings of you all, I will now attempt to say something in glorification of our Divine Master. And then they begin their talk. But by first acknowledging they're not qualified, and there are more qualified people present, but they don't say, therefore I'm not going to say anything. No. They say, I've been asked, and by the grace of the Vaishnavas, I will try, by your mercy, perhaps I can say something that is a fitting glorification. And now I will try to glorify our Divine Master. So that is the general tenor of the Vaishnavas. Mahaprabhu wants to introduce Rupa Goswami to the devotees. He's, and like Guru Maharaj, you know, a back-pushing man in the background. Mahaprabhu is asking him to come forward. And we're told Rupa Goswami is shy and doesn't want to say anything. But Mahaprabhu is insisting. The other devotees are making way. Rupa Goswami comes to the fore, and Mahaprabhu is saying, tell us some of these slokas from the drama you're writing. And Ramananda Roy starts inquiring, and many beautiful things are said. But at first, he's hesitating. Same thing with Guru Maharaj. He told Saraswati Thakur, I want to hear him sing Sri Rupa Manjari Pada. Guru Maharaj is in the background. He's hesitating. He's thinking to himself, unfit, shy, unfit. So much so that the manager of Gaudiya Math calls another devotee, tells another devotee who had some reputation as a kirtaniya, a good singer, like you sing. And he starts singing. Saraswati Thakur says, no, I'm not interested to hear a sweet tune. I want to only hear this from his lips. And then Guru Maharaj began singing. So he wasn't in some competitive mood with the godbrother. Neither was the godbrother who stopped singing. He realized, he could have said, oh, well, I was asked to sing and I'm singing, I will continue. No, he thought, no, Prabhupada Saraswati Thakur, his desire, however much my desire might be, his desire is to hear Sri Rupa Manjari from the lotus lips of Srila Guru, Srila Sridhar Maharaj. So he deferred. That's the general way of the devotees, is to, thinking themselves unqualified and unfit, to defer to others. But when it is inescapable, or clearly a direct order from Guru and Vaishnav that you are expected to perform a particular seva, with folded palms and a bowed head, they offer themselves and proceed. Yes. And these, what I'm answering generally, right? These are principles. Just as, you know, if someone says like, well, when I find myself in certain situations or with certain problems, do you recommend that I add, subtract, multiply, or divide? What should I do when I find myself in these situations or with these problems? And Guru Maharaj is saying, in some instances, you add. In others, for other problems, you subtract. Sometimes you multiply, sometimes you divide. It depends on what the problem is. And sometimes it's a combination of those things. So I'm speaking in principle. Because sometimes people ask a general question and get some sort of an answer. And then they run into a specific situation and will say, Maharaj said this. You know. But does it apply in that situation? All these things have to be thought out carefully.
Maharaj, could you please tell us the story, the history of our Vrindavan deities?
That Madhusudan Maharaj will tell tomorrow evening.
Under instruction, direction, without being qualified.
Just next question.
What does satisfaction mean when you do not search anymore?
That means you're sick. That means you're unhealthy. It's like saying, you know, what does satisfaction mean when you no longer eat? Right? You've lost all interest in food. What that tells us is that you're sick, you're ill, you're unhealthy. Because, you know, healthy means hungry. So every day, hunger reappears, doesn't it? Unless we're ill. It's not to say, we may say that, something like, that was the meal to end all meals. Yeah, and I guarantee you, tomorrow you'll be hungry. You know, it's just a matter, it's a level of praise, it's a magnitude of praise. To say, this tastes so, if you haven't ever eaten this, it tastes so wonderful, you've never eaten. It's not true, it's a way of speaking. So, hunger is an indication of health in the physical sense. And if we're going to follow that conceit, what shall we say? Is that in addressing our hunger, we ingest something that is vital. And here I remember from my days in Germany, they have the word Essen for food. And I thought, oh, like essential, you know, Essen. So you take in what is essential, then you extract from that what is vital, what promotes vitality, and then you eliminate. So Guru Maharaj stated this in a principle, progress means elimination and a new acceptance. It's the same thing. Sometimes certain things have to be eliminated and new things accepted. There's not just one final thing. It's a dynamic process, constant elimination and a new acceptance. So to maintain our health, that's what we do. So for the aspiring servitor also, we have to have some hunger for hearing. In the Bhagavatam, famous slokas there in the beginning, first canto, maybe it's second chapter, somewhere around, first, second chapter. Dharmak swanushtita pungsang visvaksena katasuya notpadayed yadiritim srama eva hi kevalam. So it says, whatever you're doing, that's dharmasya swanustitak pungsha. Whatever you're doing, if notpadiye jadiritam, if the end result is not some increased attraction for hearing about Krishna, Vasudeva Kataruji, you know, some taste for hearing, chanting, remembering about Krishna, says then srama eva hi kevalam, then you're wasting your time. Right? So this is the measure. There should be some hunger for these things. We hear in the Chaitanya Charitamritam, this one of the Krishna Bhakti Rasa Bhavitamati Kriyatam Yudhi Kutopi Labhyate Tatra Nalabhyate Tatra Lolam Mulyam Ekalam Janmakoti Sukritair Nalabhyate. Because you won't get this, what we're aspiring after, after 10 million lifetimes of just doing the right thing monotonously. Okay. But it's saying, the word used there is, what is that? Lolium. And lolium means, it's interesting because it has a mundane meaning, but here it's being used in a spiritual sense. Sometimes we're told lolium is a bad thing. It means desire. Like the way desire can be so intense, that sort of hunger. So in one place, Rupa Goswami and Upadeshwami are saying that, like, that's one of the things that's not good for progressive devotion. Right? The desire, the hunger for the mundane. But here we're told, this is the purchase price on the spiritual side of things, this genuine hunger that Guru Maharaj said, it's like hunger, earnestness, etc. Right? And that indicates spiritual health. Once, one of the devotees visiting the mat, he asked, actually it was Shyamananda Prabhu, and he asked Srila Guru Maharaj, hearing this, he's saying so. He said, so you're saying that, you know, what's required is developing this hunger, having this hunger. He said, then the next question is like, how to get that hunger? And Guru Maharaj said, associate with the hungry. And we see, I mean, Gurudev, Srirasrava Prabhu, Vaishnava Maharaj pointed this out. It's unique to Gurudev that we could have just relished like a feast on one of the major feast days. So everyone's feeling very satisfied. Said, but maybe an hour or so later, Gurudev could start talking about prasadam in such a way that it would reignite your hunger. For those who thought they were like satisfied beyond this, you know, for days. He could speak in such a way as to reignite that hunger. So we learn something from that too, that we may be relatively satisfied with some brush with Krishna consciousness or a cursory acquaintance with Krishna consciousness. And we may think, rightfully so, oh, this is wonderful, this exceeds all my past experience with other things. It's, you know, infinitely better than that. That's true. But as Guru Maharaj said, it's something dynamic. Then even in such a position, coming in connection with a higher agent, somebody who has superior hunger, who's able to extract greater quality and greater quantity of this tasteful substance, that takes us to a new level of hankering. So the satisfaction position should not be misunderstood as one that is static. As Guru Maharaj is saying, not a static ocean, like ocean of joy is quite a concept in and of itself. But Guru Maharaj would say, not a static ocean of joy, you know, but dynamic, right? Anandam Bhurivardhanam Pratipatam Punamritasvadhanam. That's Anandavardhan. Means it's Anandam, but it's like increasing Anandam. It's and increasing means it's alive, it's fresh, it's like anything living. Anything alive shows new characteristics. That's one of the qualities of being alive. It's one of the qualities of being alive within Krishna consciousness. Is to show some new qualities, some new characteristics, some new interests, increased eagerness for tasteful things. Rasovarjam rasopyasya paramdishva nivartate. You can't remain in the neutral position. Guru Maharaj said that also, like when he said, he gave the example, riding a bicycle, right? Or we can say riding a scooter here, or whatever. You can't just stay, like, you have to keep going forward. If you stop going forward, it tips over. You can't just stay in that neutral position balancing. Right? So he said there's the necessity to always make forward progress, to stay upright. And on this point of satisfaction, when Guru Maharaj said to me that, he said in the afternoon, when he's sitting there in his chair, what they call a plantation chair, the one with the big long arms, and he would, in the morning he sits looking toward Mayapur and the Yogpit. East. In the afternoon, he goes to his other chair, and there's like our deities and you know, and he's offering some prayers and everything. But this is just a very informal time. Maybe Gurudev's bringing some mail or something. There's no class, that kind of thing. Just, you know. But Guru Maharaj is there. He seems very pleased with himself. Like, he's just thought of something. Because that's something I want to say to you too. He would tell me sometimes, like, with like childlike excitement, and somebody say, "This just came to me 2 days ago," and want to share that. Not like, "I realized this in 1942 and I've been saying it ever since." That's okay too, but that's not Guru Maharaj. That's why and maybe I'm totally biased, but the books that we made for Srila Guru Maharaj, they were after like another 40 years of inner dialogue and consideration. After he composed so many things, did so many things, this is what came out of him. As I say, after another 40 years of churning and thinking and developing. And so it should never be thought of as anything less. In fact, if anything, more. Right? So he'd say, "This came to me 2 days ago," and he'd be very eager to share that. So on this particular occasion, he said, "I say, the ultimate reality is dancing." He said, "What do you say?" And he's like, "Ha, ha, ha." And I'm sitting in front, and I'm thinking, like, I've never heard this sort of expression before, and I think, wow. The ultimate reality must be dancing. And he repeated, "I say the ultimate reality is dancing. What do you say?" You know. And I didn't know how to respond to that. Then Guru Maharaj started explaining and referencing one of the last verses of Premadama Deva Stotram, the one Atma Siddha Sava Lila Purnasokya Lakshanam. Purnasokya Lakshanam, like Sulakshana, Lakshana. What is the symptom? Sokya, Purna Sokya, of like complete, full happiness and satisfaction. He's saying, when you are satisfied to the extreme degree, or what they call the nth degree, said, you are unable to contain that joy. The outcome or the consequence of being fully satisfied to the infinite degree, because it cannot be contained, it manifests as dancing. So he is making the case, Mahaprabhu is the ultimate reality. Because he can't, in the position of Srimati Radharani, appreciating Krishna, he cannot contain the ecstatic joy that he's experiencing. And the outcome is that his arms go and he's madly dancing in ecstasy. And so Guru said, "Oh, so I say the ultimate reality must be dancing." Right? If he's Om Purnam Adak Purnamidam Purnat Purnam Udachite Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnam Eva Vasishite. We think, oh, Purnam, that means complete. Yeah, that's one way and a correct way. But also another meaning is like Guru is a Purnasokya Lakshana, you know, fulfilled, satisfied beyond what can be contained within the heart. Like the word ecstasy is interesting because maybe the Russian devotees know something, because it's like Greek, ecstasis. What's the Russian word?
Ecstasy.
Huh?
Ecstasy.
Ecstasy. So it's like the Greek word. And what that means, just like ecto, and what's the opposite word for internal? I'm so happy people don't actually know. It means they're not wasting their time. It's a very simple word, like ecto and the other one. Huh?
Endo.
There you go. Give that gentleman a nice piece of burfi. Ecto-endo. So, but ecstase, ecstas, ecstasy means, if you look at it literally, saying that outside yourself, that's why the ecto part is there. Saying like, in other words, what you're experiencing is so great, it can't be contained inside. You go outside of yourself. I mean, there's another meaning of besides myself, which Guru Maharaj would say from time to time. That means not in a good way, you know. But this means in a good way. So what Guru Maharaj is saying, it's your, what you're experiencing is so wonderful and so fulfilling and satisfying that the only thing you do is like dance ecstatically. And he's saying, and do what? And he's vibrating Krishna Nam. There's so much relish of the sweetness, he can't stop vibrating the holy name of Krishna. So he's madly dancing, chanting Krishna Nam, the supreme positive in the garb of the supreme negative. Sweetness itself is tasting itself, going mad as an outcome, and ecstatically singing and dancing. So as Siddhanti Maharaj reminded me once, this caught his ear. You know, it's amazing that he is Siddhanti Maharaj, because he would catch these fine Siddhantic points. They were not lost upon him. So he liked hearing Guru Maharaj say, the cause is the effect. Right? And this is in relation to Mahaprabhu. That's where it comes from. Guru Maharaj, but is the cause is this relishing of Krishna Nam and tasting the sweetness. In fact, is he's saying Krishna Nam and ecstatically dancing. And that's, it's a, he said, like a dynamo generating ecstatic substance. So there's no satisfaction in the conventional sense if that implies achieving some sort of, you know, stasis. Not ekstas, but just stas, stasis. Non-moving, non-developing, monotonous, stasis. This is ecstasy. Right? So it must be a dynamic position. And the demands of Krishna conception are such. And what I was going to say is Srila Gurudev, it's in Religion of the Heart, speaking of Siddhanti Maharaj, because Gurudev said to me in his final days, when, like looking through that, and he said to me once, like with delightful surprise, he said, Maharaj, how did Siddhanti Maharaj make this book? Like, he captured all these wonderful things. I'm saying, Maharaj, your mercy, you know, and he, the valuable things you said were not lost upon him, but rather captured by him, collected and presented here. And I told him, because he always wanted to know what I thought of these various publications. And generally, I would say, like once I said, it's nice, he mocked me, he went, it's nice, like that's the best you can do. But on this book, he was surprised to see like how excited I was about it. And I said, and you can make a case that there are things found in here you won't find in Charitamritam or any other place. And Gurudev said, yes, I am seeing that. And this was given by Siddhanti Maharaj. And one of those things was this song, and I believe it is Chandi Das, the one about Shyamanam. Yeah, but anyway, there, and I can't represent that properly or fully, but one aspect of it is saying that, and now I'm paraphrasing, because it's beautiful poetry, and a beautiful explanation by Srila Gurudev. But the gist is, Srimati Radharani saying, you can never be satisfied by any amount of seeing Krishna. It's not possible. Why? Because the end result of that will be you just want more. There's not like you're saying like, oh, and that was a pretty good amount of Krishna. I think I'm happy with that. I'll be back next week. Or I think that's good for this lifetime. And, you know, no, she's saying you'll never be satisfied by seeing Krishna, smelling Krishna, all the different sensual activities that are possible. You'll never reach a satiation point. You'll always be left in a position of hankering for more. And we're back to that lolyam, that hankering, which is called that hunger, that hankering, that's the purchase price for Krishna consciousness. Is there anything else that's along these lines? Or what is it? Or someone asked this evening?
Yes, one more question. Maharaj, dust breaching has its own fashion. How to find out what is up to date in the preaching world?
First, once you become acquainted with, you know, Chaitanya Charitamritam, Srimad Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, Upadeshamrita, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, all of the books of Srila Guru Maharaj, the books of Srila Gurudev, become thoroughly acquainted with those contents. Right? And then we can have this discussion. Right? But to not reference that and just like the one writer said that he who's a theist, he was shocked when some editor who was recruiting him for a publication said, and I'm paraphrasing, but something like, you know, what's hot right now, and you know, and the world of eternality, and you know, and all the, like, what's trending? And he was actually offended by that. He's saying, like, this can't be a serious question. So first, we have to become acquainted with basic things and intermediate things and other things, so that we have a proper understanding of what this is, then we can talk about methods of how to promote this to others. We may say it's laudable to, in the time of plague, to say that everyone should be vaccinated, right? No one will argue against that. But what will be all important is what is the vaccine? Right? Now is the flu season, and they have different articles about taking flu shots. But then somebody will say, but is this the flu shot that is, that, what's the word? Begins with an N? Inoculates one from this disease. So the vaccine, what is being injected, is all important. Right? Not just the methodology. What is being given? Is it genuine spiritual substance or something else? So we need to be first acquainted with the substance of Krishna consciousness. Then we can talk about different ways of presenting that. But I would say, in general, as a guiding principle, that what you are appreciating about all of this, because sometimes people may get the impression you have to be a designated preacher, you have to be a scholar, and on the basis of what I just said, you say, well, I'm unfamiliar with, you know, all of those books and things you mentioned. And all right, but what do you appreciate about this? In good faith, you can share that with another person. And that lends to it some authenticity, right? They can perceive, oh, this is sincere, it's genuine. So that would be a general rule, but we owe it to our Guru Varga to become acquainted with what it is they're saying is significant. Otherwise, we may place emphasis on things that are not substantial, but just catch our fancy, our whim that we think, oh, for some reason. So we should be careful about those things. And Saraswati Thakur, Guru said, his motto, Pujala Ragapat Gaurava Bhange Matala Sarujana Vishayarange. Saying, Raga Marg, Raga Bhakti, that should be kept above as worshipable. We should not try to bring that down into this plane. Right? Saying, but, and what shall we do? The Vishayarange, Guru Maharaj relates it as some bait. We may use various means, but for what purpose? To bring people in connection with this substance. Not just to be clever, or to dilute the substance of Krishna consciousness, or to conceal the substance of Krishna consciousness, or any such thing, in the name of being clever, modern, up to date. It's those two things have to be there. The actual substance, and then bringing people in connection with that, not something else. Right? When Srila Saraswati Thakur was surveying the press, and they would see the different articles being submitted by different devotees, not in every instance, but we're told sometimes, without reading the whole article, you say, like, how many times does he mention Krishna? And, you know, they'd say, like, this many times, like it was a lot or something. You say, oh, then that's a good article. He's not reading all the things he's saying, but he mentioned Krishna and Mahaprabhu, and yeah, and then that's very good. I spent so many words, no mention of Krishna, Mahaprabhu, no. Right? But there was a girl, a child, in the original days in ISKCON, her name was Saraswati, right? And daughter of Shyama Sundar and Malati at the time. And, I mean, you can see her. She's like, you know, 3-4 years old, and sometimes she's like playing with Prabhupada. I mean, a very fortunate child, you know. But she would just hear different things. But Prabhupada was hearing her talking to people, and he was saying, what does it mean to preach? And he said, just like our Saraswati, she will go up to some man and say, you know who is Krishna? Supreme Personality of Godhead. He said, that is preaching. She would say, you know who is Krishna? Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we don't want to be so up to date that there's no spiritual substance to be traced in what we're expressing. Then what was the purpose of all of this to begin with? We're told the greatest fortune in this world is come in connection with Vaishnavas, and, you know, to hear the holy name of Krishna. Right? And then we're saying, well, we're going to hide the name of Krishna from people. The devotees of Krishna are going to hide the name of Krishna from people. That cannot be. Right? But how to present Krishna conception? We'll use all of our intelligence and skills. Right? But making sure that what we're delivering is spiritual substance, that what we're giving people exposure to is something real, substantial, and genuine. Hare Krishna. What did Mahaprabhu say? Jare dako tari kaho Krishna upadesh. Hare Krishna.